Things are beginning to heat up now, both figuratively and very, very literally. Because Ferrari's new engine is coming in hot and Mercedes are looking rather fragile right now. Think about it. First Russell and now Antonelli have had cars conk out of them at the worst possible moment for their efforts, Canada and Barcelona, and now their closest rival is ready to bring a more powerful engine to what could be the hottest race on the calendar so far. And, oh yeah, the team principal who led his driver's fight is now wondering how much freedom he can still afford them. So immediately you can tell there are three separate problems and they're all converging around the Red Bull Ring, which is a very nice track to actually go around, by the way. I do have for you down below and up top, there, a little mini vlog series that I did when I went there in 2025. But in any case, Austria is a rather simple affair. Mercedes, they have a really big battery problem, which they haven't really gotten down to the bottom of, and Ferrari are about to receive the first fruits of the Aduo labor, and the process of actually getting there has been rather laborious. And the track itself is going to be really hot. It's very high up in the mountains, the Styrian region. And it's going to be very, very demanding when it comes to cooling. That's the whole thing of the weekend, really, whether Mercedes can actually stand the heat or they'll have to vacate the cooking area. But despite that, after seven rounds, we still have Kimi Antonelli in front with 156 points, with Lewis Hamilton 41 points behind him. Mercedes are 72 points ahead of Ferrari and the constructors. Now, on the surface, that sounds rather comfortable, right? Because we're only a third of the way into the season. Well, I can assure you, it is not. It was comfortable until the W17 started to die and there'd be a really big fundamental problem. And it's something that has been dogging this team for quite a few years now. A really big sensitivity when it comes to temperatures, although this time the root cause of the maladies in hot weather has moved from tyres and balance issues to the actual battery that helps power half of the motor. And it doesn't really help that Lewis has also been rather consistent in the last few races. Mercedes technical director James Allison confirmed last week that the failures originated in the same broad part of the battery, and he said the team has taken a slight half step backwards to be more cautious with the equipment. And in terms of a timeline for a proper fix, there is no timeline for a proper fix. The damaged Canada battery was so badly compromised, it couldn't even be flown back to Europe, so it's currently sitting on a container ship somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean right now. In theory, Mercedes might not actually be able to cure this battery until the very near end of the season, or maybe not even until 2027, unless things get really desperate and Toto hires a helicopter to get out to that container ship saying, ah yes, we're going to run some diagnostics on the actual board, I don't care what we have to do, but yet you definitely can't carry broken batteries in the air. I mean, just ask anyone who owned a Galaxy Note 7. Also, both Antonelli and Russell are on their second battery out of a maximum of three for the year. If they need a fourth one, that's going to mean a 10-place grid drop. Between the two failed Mercedes cars, 43 driver points were sitting there when they died. So the old demon of high temperatures remains with the silver car. And what we've got in Austria this weekend, folks? Oh, look at that. We've got an orange heat warning in Spielberg with temperatures up to 35 degrees Celsius and track temperatures maybe above 50. All at a circuit that sits nearly 700 meters above sea level, where the slightly thinner than usual air already would punish cooling, so it will be even worse for the Mercedes teams. And I remember being there when the temperature was around 27 degrees Celsius. And just by the way, if you got a grandstand seat, you are going to be very grateful for that, because there's a nice little breeze that channels up and down the actual start-finish straight. And what will definitely save Ferrari's bacon is that the first ADU upgrade for their engine will be arriving for the Austrian Grand Prix. And whether or not this will actually transform their season, it might not be the absolute magic bullet that they need, but it's certainly a worthwhile start and could cure many of their ills. And we've covered the ADUO thing many times, and from a few weeks back, we found out that the first pecking order meant that Red Bull Ford powertrains were the benchmark power unit in terms of the combustion engine out of everybody on the grid, that even Mercedes would be getting one upgrade in this cycle. And whilst Red Bull is disputing this, what is not being disputed is the fact that Ferrari is destined for two upgrades this year and two upgrades next year. And pending FIA approval, Ferrari's revised engine and a new shell fuel compound should reportedly deliver 4 to 5 extra horsepower from the engine and another 2 to 3 from the fuel, which works out to roughly a tenth of a second per lap at the Red Bull Ring. And this engine will be ready for both Hamilton and Leclerc for FP3 onwards. Now, a tenth doesn't really sound like much on its own, but it sounds like a lot more when you remember Ferrari's engine philosophy. You see, folks, the Scuderia runs a steel alloy cylinder head that handles combustion temperature no aluminium head can survive, because that particular configuration allows them to push in intake air up to 100 degrees Celsius, whereas other engines can only push air a meager, chilly 60 to 70 degrees. And according to these reports, these upgrades are actually allowing this engine to run even hotter, upwards of 110 degrees. Ferrari are able to run their engine even hotter, and it's happening. Oh, would you look at that? One of the hottest tracks of the year so far. So this could be something that'll be very, very handy and gives them a little bit more wiggle room. Whether or not they can actually go for a Ferrari 1-2 this time around, I don't really think that is going to be the case just yet, because there may be an even bigger upgrade for the second ADUO cycle, which comes around by the time of the Italian Grand Prix. Understandably so, because hey, it's Monza. But either way, the physics of that particular engine could actually serve this team in good stead as we head into the summer. We've got four Grand Prix coming up in a little much as 5 weeks. This could be at a transformative period for this particular championship. But in terms of the championship, let's go over the scorecard from Barcelona, okay? Because we really do have to consider that. I had Antonelli to win, and he was running second when he retired, and then I had Hamilton second, and he won by 20 seconds. I had Russell third, and he finished second. I had Piastri fourth, and he came over fifth. And I had Leclerc fifth, but he retired four laps from the end with a complete hydraulic failure that took out his brakes, power steering, and of course his gear shifts all at once. So, yeah. Two of my five picks didn't see the checkered flag, and neither retirement had anything to do with pace. And both cars, when they actually did kick the bucket, were around about the same position as I had them pegged for anyway. So I wasn't really that far off. It was just a matter of reliability that was my undoing in these particular predictions. Meanwhile, the ones that did finish were only like one or so places higher than I actually called for. So you know what? I wouldn't think that's too bad. So I think the lesson we can take away from the first of the two Spanish Grand Prix this year is that reliability is very much going to skew any sort of prediction. So whilst I will take that into consideration this time around, I really just cannot predict every single time that every single driver will retire. Or otherwise, yeah, that'll be incredibly hard, because what happens if they don't retire? It would look really silly. Well, I mean, even sillier than I do now. So remember that when we get to the pick of who I've got for P1 this time around. So, the track. The Red Bull Ring's 10 turns and the lap with the shortest time of the year, one with four straight zones for this weekend with heavy braking into turns 1, 3 and 4. The altitude thins the air, which hurts both cooling and downforce, although not nearly as much as Mexico City, which is the highest track on the calendar. Pirelli, they're bringing the softest compounds in the range, C3 for the hards and then C5 for the softs. Deg here is more thermal rather than abrasive, according to Pirelli, because the track surface has not been renewed in recent times. It's rough. It's going to generate even more heat from the rubber, which connects directly to the ambient temperature story. So yeah, multiple stops here I think are going to be very, very likely. And based on what we got in Barcelona, we got absolute cinema, with Ferrari actually plumping for an old school three stopper. And as history will remember, three stoppers produce a lot of drama. Ferrari has been famous for those in the Schumacher era, and Hamilton made good use of that. I do think two stoppers will be the average here. So in terms of jeopardy, that's good for us. And when it comes to upgrades beyond the Ferrari engine, Red Bull are going to be bringing their second major package for this season, the first one, of course, being Miami. And the priority of this particular segment of upgrades for the Red Bull Ring, their home track, is to get their weight down close to or matching the 768 kilogram weight limit. The first version of their car was at least 12 kilos over the limit, the Miami upgrade halved that, and then this one is expecting to dink that down another 6 kilograms. And for them, that might be worth 0.2 of a lap in terms of weight loss alone. And even though De Telegraaf's Eric Van Haren, as well as being Verstappen's mouthpiece, reports the package is even more significant than the Miami one, team boss Lauren Mekies has been direct about expectations, saying the Austrian package alone will not be enough to guarantee race victories. In short, they're not expecting miracles. As for Mercedes, as of now, they are not expected to bring any upgrades because their first package came around for the Canadian Grand Prix. And I really do not think, you know, upgrades will be really their priority. Their main priority will be just trying to survive the weekend. They might have to just dial down their engine a little bit just to make sure they actually get to the end of the line, because if they have another reliability failure, it might throw the entire Constructors and Drivers Championship into jeopardy. Because hey, if Lewis Hamilton wins again and Antonelli does not get to the end of the race, and even George does, this could be a really big boon for the Scuderia. But anyway, let's get down to who I think might be in contention for points. And to start off with, I have got the Ferrari of Leclerc and the McLaren of Piastri. First, Leclerc. The SF26 upgrades that carried Hamilton to victory in Barcelona will be on Charles's car as well. And the ADUO engine boost applies to both Ferraris, so the tools are clearly there. But we do have to remember, the last time Leclerc put together a clean weekend was back in Japan. He crashed in qualifying at Monaco, crashed in qualifying at Barcelona, and retired from both races. In Spain, he recovered from 10th to 6th, sure, but then the hydraulics killed all of that. And afterwards, for the whole weekend, due to the qualifying crash, he felt enormous shame. And you really do need to have a clean weekend, especially since the start line advantage that Ferrari had at the beginning of the year is now practically non-existent. So in order for Leclerc to be any higher or have a chance at the top five, he needs to be in the top five on the Saturday in Q3. Piastri will be in the mix too for points, but when it comes to this, I feel like the Red Bull Ring was the start of the wobble that saw him lose the championship advantage and it ultimately swinging back towards a two-man fight between Verstappen and Norris. This being one of those tracks where I'm not entirely sure he will actually be absolutely all guns blazing, because he too has had moments where he can't explain why he suddenly fell off in terms of pace. That was the case around Barcelona, when he was dozens of seconds behind his teammate Norris, who got a podium for the team. And even though McLaren are bringing a Macarena wing of their own for the Austrian Grand Prix, or at least are going to trial it, but knowing McLaren, they probably will walk it back for FP2, I don't seriously think that the Australian will be the stronger of the two drivers this time around. And considering this is my boy, that really pains me to say that. And that's not before all of the mechanical bugs in the Mercedes, so that's something they have to consider too. And McLaren, they don't have the same understanding that Mercedes do, so, you know, watch out for that. They've been bitten by batteries breaking themselves. Meanwhile, I expect Gasly to put in another consistent performance, especially off the back of having gained 7 positions in Barcelona, going from 14th to 7th. The Red Bull Ring's heavy braking zone should suit his driving style as well. And another detail worth noting is that even though Gasly runs a Mercedes power unit, if you've observed, the team hasn't suffered nearly as much problems as the works team or other customers have had. That's very interesting. They have been, out of Williams and McLaren, the most reliable. Hadjar is somebody else I expect to be battling for decent points, but with Mekis very much tempering the Red Bull masses with his pragmatic read on their upgrades, a top 5 finish may require some technical gremlins getting in the way for Isaac to score higher. The same thing I think would apply for Carlos Sainz, but he does have a history of being able to slot himself into positions that you do not expect that particular Williams car to be getting into. And considering that there is a lot of feedback around the paddock going about the futures of both Albon and Sainz at Williams, he will be wanting to make a good impression in case the rumours are true, that maybe Sainz might wind up at Audi after all, albeit 2 years later than expected. But that is of course Spanner talk, and I want to keep Spanner talk in predictions videos to a minimum. And of course, yes, they also have to consider the reliability of their power unit around here. And then of course, I do maybe think this might be the opportunity for Haas to maybe score a point with Oliver Bearman. But one thing we do have to consider is that, according to reports, both Haas and Cadillac may not take up the brand new Ferrari engine due to the fact that it might require some adjustments to the bodywork or adjustments to the chassis. And that might not be something that the two smaller teams in comparison to the Scuderia may be able to do or may want to do for this particular race. It might come further down the line, or maybe they might just decide to skip it entirely and then just bank on the idea for the Monza upgrade. Since they are customers, they will be more privy to what's going on in terms of the development of that particular power unit. So who knows? And now it's time for Aston Martin watch. Do I think they are going to be out of Q1? I think they will be out in Q1, and realistically, they probably will be on the back row of the grid, because Koji Watanabe, the lead for Honda Racing, has basically said that there's still a lot of work to do, and they, Honda, are saying that what's been going down is simply not good enough. This becoming very clear that the two parties, Honda and Aston Martin, are not in the best place right now. They're doing what they can to make things better, but this relationship is off to an even worse start, I think, than it was with McLaren. And even though Alonso scored their first point around Monaco, that was mainly due to penalties and crashes ahead of him. A war of attrition and red flag restarts, I think. With thin air punishing an already underpowered Honda engine, it wouldn't surprise me if the two cars are on the back row, or they don't even make it to the end of the race. But what shouldn't surprise you is that this is now the part of the video where I talk about the top five. So without further ado, here they are. In fifth place, I've got Max Verstappen. Now already you might be thinking, oh, you're only just saying that to get some engagement, aren't you, Law? Come off it. This is Max Verstappen around the Red Bull Ring, their home track, with the biggest upgrade package, according to Eric Van Haren, his own mouthpiece. I do hear you there, but we do have to accept what Mekis had to say. There was no glorification of these upgrades, there was only reality. And Red Bull have had to deal with a lot of realities this time around, especially for the fact that Verstappen has not been committing to anything regarding his future, whether he's staying or whether he's even going. Also, you've really got to think about Barcelona. That exposed a major problem. That, sure, these upgrades might improve the car by 2 or maybe 3 tenths or maybe half a second, this being Max Verstappen. He can make a bit of a difference. He was still, Max, 40 seconds behind Hamilton. And with McLaren testing their own upgrades and Ferrari having a new engine, it might mean that the thing that they can really achieve and be satisfied with, Red Bull, is that they're maybe a little bit closer to the Mercedes, and they're already probably going to detune their car. Where I think Verstappen could make this work is that the Red Bull Ring is a stop-start track that rewards braking confidence and traction. And that is something the RB22 is pretty good at. It's not like the Circuit de Catalunya, which was nothing but medium to high speed corners. But either way, Austria will be very important to him to at least show that the car is heading in some kind of direction, which is kind of right, but certainly not the wrong direction. It'll also probably be a test of Pierre Vacher's ability to be able to design the car, or otherwise they might have to look to Mr. Eggington, who was the V-carb lead, but now is currently in limbo around Red Bull Applied Technology. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see for that one. In fourth place, I've got Lando Norris, and it's becoming very clear that McLaren, they are the third fastest team right now, albeit somewhat notably behind Ferrari and Mercedes, but they are close enough to at least be a thorn in both teams' side in case they have a reliability issue. They will be able to pick up the pieces so long as they themselves don't have reliability issues as well. And you've also really got to consider that Norris is on top of this track. He won here last year. And the MCL40 does tend to perform well at tracks like the Red Bull Ring. The risk, though, is the same one hanging over every other Mercedes engine car on the grid. McLaren had a double DNS around China, and Norris needed a battery change around Monaco, and given the temperatures and the altitude, yeah, pure pace earns this spot, but the power unit maybe could take it away. Then in third place, I've got George Russell. Now, when it comes to the two Mercedes drivers, George has been the more consistent driver when it comes to qualifying, and around in Barcelona, him getting pole was testament to the fact that in terms of single lap situations, George has not lost any of his talent. And even though the W17 might be scaled back at least a little bit around this circuit, it is still, at the moment, the fastest car on the grid. And they themselves will be getting an ADU upgrade this year, and that might mean that might be able to solidify them having the best complete powertrain eventually. So why have I put him in third? Well, as George put it not that long ago, it has been nothing but bad luck and misfortune when it comes to multiple factors in terms of reliability and general competence of his own pit crew. I'm sorry, but it's true. Something I have really picked up upon, and I'm not being a conspiracy theorist or anything, is that for years, George Russell has been making calls that actually are pretty shrewd, but otherwise gets completely blanked by his pit wall. And procedural errors this year, they have been really, really noticeable, especially around Monaco, arguably leading to him getting his drive-through penalty, but the fact they didn't know whether or not to actually serve the 5-second time penalty stop. And then, another thing that Bradley Lord, the deputy team principal, confirmed is that the stop before George lost all pace and fell behind Antonelli, they got their front wing adjustment wrong. They gave him too much, and it meant that the car suddenly became really oversteering. Mercedes, in terms of their pit stops, they're not that great. Yeah, they got the time down, because before then, a couple of years ago, they were really slow. They're faster now, but are they as good as even Ferrari? I doubt that now. I'll just get the foam out. It's just yet another pattern. And at some point, the runner has to break, surely. So another podium would help ease the pain. But here's hoping his battery doesn't break again. And then he's on his final battery of the year, only a third of the way into said season. Then at number two, I've got Lewis Hamilton. Barcelona wasn't a fluke, and I think the numbers do prove it. 8 new aero parts closed the gap to Mercedes in one weekend, and Hamilton won by 20 seconds. Now he's arriving in Austria with a brand new power unit, which sure, only offers about maybe 6-7 brake horsepower or something like that, but hey, a tenth of a second when it comes to speed, that'll be really, really handy. And in terms of acceleration, that Ferrari is very potent with its small turbo, and something that Wolff said after the Barcelona Grand Prix is really, really telling here, that he knows that once Lewis has got the bit between his teeth, he will go after it no matter what. And maybe Something that was Mercedes undoing was allowing his own two drivers to race, because when they were allowed to do so, it meant that the gap that they had over Hamilton, which was around 18 seconds, fell down to around about 7.6. They lost 11 seconds or so due to them squabbling as to who was going to actually have track position when it came time for them to have their own stops. Hamilton might have the car to be able to pick up plenty of pieces if there is a team order squabble, or if there are battery issues, or if there's other maladies in the pit lane for either Russell or Antonelli. But the fact remains is that the Mercedes W17 is the fastest car on the grid right now. The gap is closing very, very quickly. And if upgrades from McLaren and Red Bull really kick on strong whilst Mercedes come up with Bupkis instead focusing on reliability, this could really turn into a 3 or 4 horse race for all of the podium positions, taking points away from one another, adding a little bit of jeopardy in that regard. But for now, my first place pick is, of course, Kimi Antonelli. You might be thinking this is a bit of a cop-out, but you still got to consider that out of the first 7 races, Kimi has won 5 of them. That is something you cannot dispel. Because I did have him pegged for winning the Barcelona Grand Prix. He was in 2nd place before his battery gave out. He was able to overtake Russell on the road, albeit helped now, as we find out, thanks to a bungling in the pit stops, but he was proving to be a very feisty bit of kit. And given that Wolff has already admitted that they might have to reevaluate team orders or even racing, this is only going to serve Kimi, who is 50 points ahead of his teammate right now. And even though Allison has pointed out the battery situation may not be fixed for many months now, they are getting a better understanding of what is actually going on here, which might mean they might be able to do other things around the battery or around the car to help try and mitigate it until they can actually find a proper full-on fix. And whilst I'm excited to see what happens in Austria and if Ferrari can take the fight to Mercedes, I am trying to temper my hype. This is only, as I mentioned earlier, the first ADU upgrade that Ferrari has been receiving. And the main one that will really kick things on for them will come around in time for Monza, toward the end of the European leg of the season. And we get to the second phase of the flyaways, where Ferrari might be able to fly away. But will it be enough to be able to make up the gap that Mercedes has already established? That being said, if we do get yet another battery failure, and this could happen to either Russell or Antonelli, who I've got the first place around Spielberg, this could completely upend the championship. It'll mean that he'll only be 16 points ahead of Hamilton, and that's when I think the mind games will really happen, if they haven't happened already. You know, the whole paternal act that Lewis has given over Antonelli? Might that have been a sense of false security, perhaps? That maybe, hey, this 7-time world champion might be kind to me. I really do hope Toto will have schooled him in how Hamilton operates when there is a championship fight, because Toto's seen plenty of those. But regardless, I don't expect Kimi to win by country mile. I think it might be within 5 seconds to try and make sure that they can actually get to the end of the race and not run the battery ragged. Or maybe, at most, worthy of enough maybe of a virtual safety car pit stop or something like that. So whilst I think Mercedes and Kimi will be vigorously monitoring battery health, I want you to vigorously monitor this video over here, which I know you will enjoy. I'll go and freshen myself up and cool myself down on the hottest day of the year. I'll be right with you.